Okay, we're so glad you're back with us at GoldSeek.com Radio for another Gold Nugget segment. Today's special guest, Charles Goyette. Well, Charles Goyette penned The Dollar Meltdown, a New York Times bestseller, as well as his latest Red and Blue and Broke All Over, Restoring America's Free Economy. Welcome, Charles Goyette.
Chris, always great to speak with you. Thank you.
Let's begin the discussion today with an overview of the domestic economy. You know, according to the BLS number last week, it was announced that the national unemployment rate slipped to the lowest level in about 5 years, down to 7.4%, inching closer to the Fed's threshold there of 6.5%, their target. What wasn't noted was that most of the jobs created were temporary, part-time, and this kind of leads us to that U6 unemployment figure, the former number used by the Fed, which includes job seekers who are settling for part-time work when really looking for full-time work. And when we look at that U6 unemployment number, the true unemployment rate is somewhere between 15 and 20%. Which number is more accurate from your vantage point?
Well, clearly the U6 number is more accurate. I mean, it makes very clear that we are still, I mean, if you think about this, we've had literally trillions of dollars of Fed manipulation. We've had trillions of dollars in fiscal deficits. We've had a skyrocketing of the national debt. We've had secret, unsupervised, hidden loans by the Fed to the tune of $16 trillion or so to, without oversight, to foreign corporations, foreign banks, domestic corporations, and so on. All of this over in the course of a recession that began over 5 years ago, we're still in it. We're still era levels of unemployment.
It really makes one wonder how they can get away with it. And I think the answer is really somewhat simple. I mean, it comes down to food stamp programs, which allows the everyday family member to walk into the grocery store instead of having to stand outside at soup kitchens and bread lines. They can walk in with the rest of everyone out there, and it's business as usual. Swipe those debit cards and get a bag of groceries or two. So the unemployment numbers can be held artificially low when you are able to hide the, I think, the physical manifestations that we would normally see in an economy that is virtually near depression levels. And speaking of depression levels, though, precious metals have been depressed lately, but we did just record the best month in a year on that it's too early to taper that $86 billion monthly buying spree in their QE program. Now, this has quieted rumors that the Fed was going to lower the QE to $65 billion a month in purchases. The ECB and the Bank of England also gave no guidance or little guidance last week. They held rates steady. So now that the rate hike scare is passing, do you expect precious metals to benefit?
Well, I mean, yeah, of course, precious metals are going to benefit in any case because the economy is being run by madmen. And I mean that without exaggeration. These are the people that told us that, well, their original forecast, the growth forecast, they've never been right about anything. Their growth forecast for 2013 originally ran up to as high as 3%. Then a couple of months ago, they pulled it back and they said, well, maybe I think they said 2.4 to 2.8% or something like that. And we just got the latest GDP numbers for, we're well below 2%. As a matter of fact, Chris, we're below the inflation rate. By the Fed's own questionable calculation, the inflation rate is 1.8% over the last 12 months. The rate of growth of GDP just in the last quarter was 1.7. You compound that, though, with the prior quarter, which was 1.1. There's no way we'll make 2. We'll pull in this year below the inflation rate, which is where we are for the first 6 months. So meanwhile, you've got the Federal Reserve buying, so far, first 6 months of this year, buying 100%, buying the equivalent of every dollar of Treasury debt that has been issued, actually closer to 104%. So that means that that all of the Fed's buying the first 6 months of this year of U.S. Treasury instruments, mortgage securities, and more is equivalent to all of the debt issued by the U.S. Treasury. I mean, the implications of this thing are absolutely shattering. This sounds like endgame to me. me.
We tend to forget that the inflation number is also massaged. The GDP hinges on the inflation number. So shadow stats, and we also produce our own GDP numbers here. If you include the more accurate inflation number, you could make the case that economic growth has remained negative or near zero for almost 14 consecutive years. But even if we don't want to go back that far, we just want to look at the current number, we are approaching at least recessionary numbers right now. Steer back to precious metals for a moment. You know, demand for the metals remains red hot worldwide. The gold premium at the Shanghai over the London price, roughly $20. According to rumor, though, China and Russia are vastly understating their gold reserves, that they might be preparing for a regional gold-backed currency. I'd like your thoughts.
I mean, I think it's going to happen. I would tell you the reason instantly when my book, The Dollar Meltdown, was published, instantly, the largest publishing company in China bought the rights to publish it in China, because it alluded to the fact that if they keep doing what they're doing and we keep doing what we are doing, that they will be the dominant economic powerhouse on the face of the earth for the next couple of hundred years. And we're clearly headed that way. Look, there is a lot of smoke. I'm sure you talk about this on your program all the time. There's a lot of smoke, and there's certainly a fair amount of fire under the question of whether physical gold depositories really have their gold, whether it's been sold out, pledged out, used as collateral elsewhere, whether, you know, the question of sorting out the title, who actually holds title to it when it's been used in swap agreements over and over and over again. But even without seeing all of that out, it is very clear that there is a mega trend of the movement of gold from the West to the East. And the historical record of these is very clear that we will accordingly become less dominant, less influential in the affairs of mankind on this globe, and they will become more so. We are squandering our patrimony for a mess of paper money.
Great segue into my next topic here. You know, some sources indicate that there is a slow motion run on gold at the COMEX underway, with stockpiles depleted, reaching dangerously low levels. Although the exchange is the world's largest, the Shanghai Gold Exchange actually delivers 9 times more gold to its clients. So I think that begs the question, is a default inevitable at the COMEX, and where is all the gold going to? And I think you answered that in your last statement, to the East.
Well, I live very close, more than just tangentially close, very close to the COMEX's shenanigans back in the late 1970s and early 1980, when they effectively fleeced market participants. Instead of being a market-neutral exchange institution, they decided to tilt in favor of the board members of the COMEX, and they instituted liquidation-only rules in the silver market. So these institutions have, I think it's best for all people that have to interact with these institutions to understand that they are not market institutions. They are not market neutral institutions. You have to be very careful about every representation that they make, and that not only includes the representations about their function as an exchange, but also the representations as a functional representations about their depositories and what they actually hold. There's a lot more to this story. There are layers and layers and layers of this onion that need to be peeled back, and I just urge your listeners and my own readers not to be victimized by these exchanges.
The false signals that they are leading to certainly discouraged, you know, millions of people away from ownership and physical purchases, when in fact it may just be one of the last few times to actually procure these metals at reasonable prices.
Well, I agree with you about that. I mean, let me just say a word about that. People that look forlorn about the breakdown of the gold price, I look at this as a gift. If some of the major financial institutions of the planet want to try to manipulate the gold and silver markets in such a manner as to give me a gift of lower prices for an indefinite period of time, I'm very grateful to them. I think is the best thing that could have happened. I mean, if you were planning on selling tomorrow, maybe it's not. But if you understand the long-term implications, if you understand what happens to paper money, that they all have ephemeral lives, that they all end up the same way, if you understand that this isn't our first currency crisis rodeo, you should be very grateful to these institutions and their manipulations for giving us an opportunity to continue to add to our investment at advantageous prices.
Look at it from the perspective of gold ownership. It's turning out to be the best way to participate in this final stage of the move. Time is on your side. There's no future contract. There's no options expiration. There's no theta that you need to watch. Your gold is going to last beyond even your progeny. It's a great time to look at physical. But I also wanted to move on here. We're reading reports of new ways that governments appear to be trying to discourage gold ownership. For instance, in Houston, gold sales now require fingerprinting and mugshot. I need to throw in an anecdote here because some are claiming that's just for jewelry, although my sources are indicating that comes down to the individual shop. So please, no more nasty grams when I mention this. We're not coming down on Houston, but we're just saying that this is a growing trend we're seeing. For instance, in India, they, of course, are limiting gold imports via duties and taxes, but it still amounts to government intervention. And then in Europe, ownership is now being limited in many places. In the short term, these tactics clearly have an effect, an impact. But in the long term, do you agree that they will fail in a big way and might even backfire, leading to a mad dash for precious metals and much higher prices?
Yeah, they always backfire, and they always fail in the long run. You know, I wrote a piece the other day about these state entities that believe that they are the creators of the money system rather than, you know, just institutions that ran and got around in front of the parade that people had created spontaneously of themselves. I mean, that's effectively how money was developed, by the free exchange of people, and it was only later that kings and rulers and despots and congresses and so on tried to get themselves, you know, in front of the action and take a piece of everything. But they always fail. Just the other day, the president of Syria, Bashar al-Assad, sealed his own fate by passing, his cabinet passed an edict that every transaction now by every member of the commercial classes, by everybody, service providers, manufacturers, merchants, had to be in Syrian pounds. And anybody caught violating that new edict, that new decree, was subject to 10 years imprisonment at hard labor. We have seen this before. People ask, you know, back in the 50s, I'm sure you're much too young to remember it, but back in the 50s, the question was, in presidential debates and so on, who lost China? That question is never answered, but the true answer to it is that, you know, they started issuing these funny monetary decrees, including, you know, form of payment and price controls and so on, and Chiang Kai-shek started violated them out into the streets and shot them, and the consequence was that he lost all of the support of the merchant class that he'd had up until that time, and prepared the way for Mao Zedong to take over. The same sort of thing happened in South Korea. The same sort of thing has been reenacted over and over and over again in mankind's history. It is always a war between fiat money, between government and government money, and real money like gold. Ultimately, gold always wins, but there can be a lot of blood spilled along the way.
Another cogent point. However, how is it then that we have forgotten this fact? I mean, it's in the textbooks, it's written on the walls, it's all over the internet. How did we lose this knowledge that you've tried to convey here? And I think the answer is pretty simple. We enjoyed a monopoly on the reserve currency for so long that we've actually begun to believe that it is a divine right. I'm not the first to mention this. I mean, you've written on it extensively, talked about it for decades. Ron Paul, so many others, Peter Schiff. It's something that we overlook here. We've forgotten, as you say, currencies are ephemeral. They can evaporate overnight. I mean, these things can change on a dime, and fortunes can be lost and reversed in a very brief period of time.
I raised my children in an urban environment in a city, nice city, Scottsdale, Arizona. But when they were kids, they believed that, you know, milk and eggs came from the grocery store. They never bothered to think about the whole messy business of farming and cows and chickens in the background. And it's the same with the American people. All of American people now have had the experience of, you know, using paper money and buying things with it and receiving change and taking goods from merchants and buying tickets to movie theaters and putting gas in their car with paper money. So they have never really bothered to question the presuppositions of it. What gives this paper value? Why can't I go print some myself and be rich? And you know, so it's just a question of refamiliarizing people with the reality of the nature of money in the background. And of course, that will happen. I mean, if they don't want to educate themselves before the calamity will prove to be very educational. And on the other side of it, nobody for another generation or two will forget, you know, that paper money was supposed to be just a warehouse receipt or a claim check or representation of physical gold or physical silver that was lodged and held by somebody honest somewhere. That lesson will be relearned, but it has slipped from the consciousness of the American people for the time being.
If you back your paper money with something, i.e. not fiat, you actually do back it with silver or gold, as, you know, per our Constitution, that's the way it was for 100 years, and we essentially didn't have massive hyperinflations until the Civil War, then it really doesn't come down to paper money, but you must back your currency with something, or ultimately it will implode. And I think another aspect we really haven't addressed too closely here, the rest of the world is losing faith in the dollar. And we hear story after story of Iran exchanging oil with China and Russia and other nations, bypassing the petrodollar arrangement that essentially held up our economy for decades with virtually no output from American workers required. Just the need, the demand to have the dollar as a currency of exchange to receive petro was enough to force the rest of the world to work itself just to procure those dollars. And that's coming to an end. We're seeing the BRIC nations and many others steer away from the U.S. dollar. Any comments?
Well, for people like ourselves that watch this thing very carefully, it seems to be happening very, very fast. We see all kinds of new multinational bilateral agreements all around the world to settle exchange in local and domestic currencies, in currencies of former competitors. I mean, we've had, you know, bilateral. I mean, nothing like the fiat dollar standard, the world reserve standard of the declining dollar, has been able to shove Russia and China together with similar commercial settlement interests. You know, they have developed their own bilateral agreements to settle trades with one another. This is going on all over the world, and it's a little bit perplexing to see that it's not on the front pages of the business newspapers and so on. But it is the dollar standard is deteriorating before our very eyes. And, you know, foreign governments, foreign central banks don't mind fleecing their own people with their own fiat currencies, and they will continue to do so to the extent they can. But they're very well aware of how the game works, and not many of them are too willing to be fleeced by ours. And so, you know, nobody wants to start a panic. You know, nobody wants to, you know, to exchange all of their reserves in the wink of an eye and force everybody into line to do the same thing all at once. But they can begin to move surreptitiously out of the dollar as a reserve, and believe me, they are doing it.
Here's, I think, an appropriate analogy. I mean, you could have a house, a 100-year-old home, built on a very solid foundation, multi-million-dollar estate. You live in Florida. Just so happens it's built on limestone. And, you know, before you know it, a sinkhole completely consumes the home and it falls into a giant pit. And this is why I think Americans have become so complacent. Not just Americans, but Westerners in general. We've forgotten that there is the threat of that sinkhole. And that erosion remains invisible. You think you're impervious, but it's just below terra firma. In a moment's notice, the currency evaporates, and we saw that in Weimar, and we've seen it in Argentina and Venezuela. There's so many instances over the past 100 years. That's another show. As we wrap up here today, any other thoughts, any other topics?
Well, I think people ought to keep their eye on an increasingly dangerous geopolitical situation. We still have, you know, chest thumpers out there that are constantly looking for a place to involve the United States deeper and deeper. The military is very clear that they don't want anything of a, with a war for Iran. But, you know, you have people constantly flogging for war with Iran. If you talk about something that will act as the tripwire to suddenly ending the dollar reserve standard, that's the sort of thing that can do it. You know, we can find ourselves with Obama's pivot to the Southeast Asia. We can find ourselves involved in taking sides because of treaty obligations over a fight for, you know, a couple of squalid rocky outcropping somewhere in the ocean that nobody really cares about, inhabited only by a few goats, and find ourselves in a geopolitical confrontation that ends the prosperity of the American people for a very, very long time and ends the supremacy of the dollar. So I think the geopolitical backdrop now is really, really precarious, and that is why nobody wants to be, much less short gold, nobody wants to be without physical gold or physical silver or both in their possession that they can get their hands on for sudden events. Every family needs to have some. It's our responsibilities to protect ourselves and our families first. And once we've done so, then maybe there are other opportunities.
This is a bit off topic, but I mean, you covered, I think, something that's so important, this perpetual warfare we find ourselves in. It's straight out of George Orwell's 1984. I mean, he's rolling over and he's doing backflips in the grave here. You know, this war is peace nonsense that's going on. I mean, you can't have prosperity or peace without war. We support our troops and their families and all those that have shed blood for our nation. Many of my family members going back generations did just that, and we're grateful for their sacrifice. No disrespect intended. But let's not disgrace their actions on our behalf by becoming a warrior nation. Imagine if the $1 trillion spent thus far in the Middle East, instead of building endless bases, what if we had rebuilt our infrastructure now to where we were pushing ourselves away from the need for petrol and crude oil, and we were focusing on solar panels? We're doing just that at the Gold Seek Radio Studio. Is almost entirely powered now by photovoltaics. Okay, solar panels, battery array backup that's powered by the sun. Due to technological advances, incredible advances since 1980, the last time this was the rage, are possible today. We can rebuild our infrastructure, and when you do that, you create jobs. If we don't learn the lesson now, are we not just going to keep pouring money into that endless pit over there? It's a quagmire. We need to be focusing, I guess what I'm trying to say, on the domestic economy. What do you think?
I mean, I'm a decorated military veteran myself, but you cannot support the troops if you let your government lie to you. And it looks like we're very, very close to having the lid blown off the Benghazi story and what was really going on there. And it will turn out, either way that it goes, it will turn out that the American people have been deceived. But if Benghazi was a CIA secret gun running operation supplying armaments to Al-Qaeda that we went to war with in Iraq, supplying weaponry to Al-Qaeda affiliates for Syria, then there is much more to how we are being led around than meets the eye. You cannot be supportive of the troops if you let the people be lied to about what we're doing and what our interests are. But I think if the lid blows off of that one, then it will tilt the debate in the future to non-intervention, and maybe we can do just what you've described and rebuild the American dream.
Red, blue, and broke all over, restoring America's free economy. Could you please tell folks more how they can find out about your latest work, everything you're involved in right now, and how they can pick up a copy of your book?
Well, for sure. You can get The Dollar Meltdown or Red and Blue and Broke All Over at any bookstore. I mean, clearly on Amazon and the places that people like to shop online. In addition to that, the Freedom and Prosperity Letter is a monthly. You can Google Freedom and Prosperity Letter to subscribe. Freedom and Prosperity Letter, published by Weiss Research, one of the leading newsletter publishers in the country, the Freedom and Prosperity Letter. And also, I do a daily, twice a day, radio commentary with Ron Paul on radio stations all over America. We're on about 125 radio stations. If your favorite local radio station does not carry Ron Paul's America with Ron Paul and Charles Goyette, by all means, call them and ask them to carry it. Ron Paul's America, they can contact Courtside Productions for it. Great to speak with you, Chris. Thank you so much.